Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast, and on this week's episode we're rating the biggest transfers of January, including Dorgu to United, Kvicha Kvaratskhelia to PSG, and all of Manchester City's moves. We're also opening up the burn book, while over on the paid side we take a look at Milan, the Oscars, and recommendations for what to do when you're in London. That's all on this week's episodes of Unseen Incidents. So we're back for another two episodes of the podcast. Pete Dorman, potentially your last episode as a childless man, child-free by choice.
This could be potentially the last week. Very much in limbo at this point. Very close, very unsettling in the lead up to this starting recording, this episode, when we were just chatting casually, getting set up. I think I said the words, it kind of feels like going to war. Or I imagine it feels like going to war, in that you know what's going to happen. You're kind of waiting to be shipped off. You kind of just want to get there. And just, like, the waiting is almost more frustrating. I'm saying it's not knowing what having a child's like, and also not being the one who has to actually have the child. But from my very selfish, self-involved perspective, it's getting frustrating having to wait, if I'm honest, Patrick.
Yeah, of course.
It's really quite rude and just selfish of Jess to have not birthed their baby yet.
I think you should...
Bearing in mind, we are still multiple weeks before the she did.
I'd say that at 37 weeks, right, when the baby's fully cooked.
Which is today, actually.
Every night, when Jess goes to sleep, you just whisper in her ear. You know, like those tapes where they used to try and teach you French while you're sleeping?
Or like how to stop smoking?
Yeah, you just whisper in her ear, have this fucking baby. get that baby out of you.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, I think we broadly agree that, like, it's a failure of willpower from the women in our lives to just not, like, produce the baby in a timely fashion. They're like, maybe it'll be Monday, maybe it'll be Wednesday, maybe it'll be next week. That's bullshit. Organize yourselves.
If David Goggins was having this baby, it would be out by now.
He'd have one out, and he'd be
pregnant.
Who's
going to carry the boat? Is that what he says?
I've literally no
idea. Who's going to lift the boat? It's some nonsense like that.
That sounds insanely Christian, right? That's like when, there was one set of footprints. That was when my baby, like, carried me. Yeah, that was when my baby gave me a fireman's lift and carried me along the beach. I hate that guy, man.
Oh, he's such a
penis. Like, he literally thinks he's discovered willpower, and he literally thinks that it's the only thing that matters on earth. So he's just like, everyone should just work out as much as I work out. They should just do this all the time. You're like, no, because you've got no cartilage in your knees.
You're
the world's most boring man as well. He's just like, look how good it is. I work out all the time. It's like, okay, what happens if you just, like, break your leg or become, like, physically incapable? You literally have no personality.
The thing is, it's so, so insufferable. Like, we're two guys that historically have gone to the gym a lot and been very interested in the gym. But if you meet somebody who only talks about the gym, it is mind-numbingly painful just to listen to them and to try and find... Like, even if you try and steer the conversation into something, anything else, they always try and steer it back, and you're like, wow, this is it, right?
Bruh, okay, I'm gonna save this for later. But
so have I stepped on the toes of an entry later?
Yeah, I had a gym encounter.
Oh wow, okay, this is totally unexpected, but I look forward to hearing that.
It was fucking annoying. okay, yeah, we'll save it for later. But today we're gonna rate some of the biggest transfers from January, because it was a pretty active January. We expected it to be, but in the end, maybe even more active than we expected. You know, like City, for example. We're just quiet, and then bang, deals done left and right. Ended up with four of the top eight deals in January were Manchester City. But United did the thing that we said they should do. They went out and got a left back / left wing back. PSG made a huge move. We saw a big Saudi sale. And player we talked about previously on the pod, Marcus Rashford, did get his United exit. So we're going to go through a bunch of those today, talk about them, try and rate them, give you our perspective on, like, the quality of the player, the price, and the fit for the team as well. So I think we should probably start off with Dorgu, just because I think people are probably most interested in hearing you talk about him. And also, I think Dorgu's like a player you can dream on. Like, a load of these guys, I'm like, it is nice when a player I know to be good goes somewhere. Yeah. But it is kind of exciting when a massive team, or Man United, takes a gamble on, like, a 20-year-old who's going to play every minute, in theory. Like, that is really exciting.
That was such a Labour joke. I could see the cogs turning in your head before it came.
The cogs were turning because it was a mechanical joke. Like, yeah. I don't think I could have said that without putting the dig in.
That's like the kind of joke you hear, like, you would deliver it in a wedding speech. Or like a best man speech or father of the bride speech, being like, oh, he's a good lad, but, you know, United or shit.
Maybe it would have made it into my wedding speech if you'd invited me to make a speech at your wedding. But Jess was like, oh, my dad's going to do a speech or whatever.
You literally spoke at my wedding, Patrick.
I did a reading. I wasn't allowed to do my own stuff.
That would be madness, giving you the carte blanche to say what you wish.
If you'd said you can either read a Seamus Heaney poem or you can read a work of your own devising, then I'd have been like, you better believe. Like, this is going to be a 20-minute speech and
therein lies the reason behind our decision.
Well, I don't know. I think that a wedding's an opportunity to be generous, but okay. Fine, whatever. Let's go on to Dorgu then. Dorgu, Lecce to United, which feels like Lecce are an... I thought you would approve of this because Lecce have an incredibly like sort of 99-2000 Serie A flavour to them. You know, like the Parmalat times, the Fiorentina heyday. Like they feel like they kind of
they feel like
they have a link
belong
to that time. Yes,
where they
exactly
are now.
That's what I mean. They feel too shit to exist in 2025.
And to be honest, the way they're playing in Serie A this season, they might not belong in Serie A for long. But yeah, I mean, this transfer, I really like this transfer. We touched on it a little bit in the last episode, and I think you asked me in that episode, like, what do United need to do to, like, what are the first steps to United kind of becoming better again? And the thing I said was target the whole, the very significant gaps in the squad, fill them with young players that are arrive for a good price but profile well and that you believe have a very good chance of turning into somebody better than they are now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of essentially what they've done here with Dorgu. So he's arrived for £25 million, and I think there's about plus £4 million in that based on performance-based bonuses. So under £30 million, 20 years old, attack-minded, like, quote-unquote defender, but he has an incredible amount of versatility to basically play any position on either flank. And that kind of presents Amorim with a very similar scenario as it does with Diallo, in that he is capable of playing him multiple positions on the left flank or the right flank if he wanted, but obviously he's got Ahmad there. And that straight away helps Amorim kind of facilitate these scenario-based tweaks that he makes, the way he plays sometimes in the front two, attacking midfielders, sometimes he plays him at right wing back, depending on how attacking or defensive he feels the team are going to be. I'm not saying Dorgu will ever be used in that left wing role, because there is that left attacking mid role, because you've always got Bruno Garnacho and stuff, but he could be, at least it's an option. But it does present a huge amount of versatility, and a guy who is very, very importantly an actual, like, in and out left back, left wing back type player, which United don't have. They've been shoehorning players in to that role since Amorim came in. In terms of contract, completely fine. 5 years. He's on 32k a week, which grows year on year, but his first year is 32k a week, which is less than half of what Tyrell Malacia is on. And, well, obviously Tyrell Malacia has just gone to PSV, but...
That actually went through in the end.
I saw it this afternoon that it went through. I haven't looked into the actual parameters and what the weird contributions and stuff are, because it is a loan, isn't it?
It was weird, though, that he was also linked with a loan to Benfica, because I was like, Benfica already have Alvaro Fernandez, so, like, at that point, I was like, are they maybe going to, like, get him as well? Like, get both of these guys? Like, that wouldn't be terrible. I mean, the one thing is on the salary, like, yeah, it starts at, like, 32k a week, but Romano said today that it does grow year on year. I mean, still, even if it triples by the end of that, like, in 5 years, he'll be 25.
Yeah.
Even if it triples then, 90k a week for a starting quality Premier League left back is very cheap.
Yeah, like, even if it doubles in the next 2 to 3 seasons, he's still on less than what Tyrell Malacia has been sitting on.
Yeah.
And Tyrell Malacia hasn't played.
It's mental how little he's played.
And isn't overly... Well, I mean, it feels harsh to say he's not good because, you know, the sample size is so small. But yeah, like, it represents, in my opinion, very, very good value for money and not too much of a risk. In terms of the price itself, I've seen people say it was too high, but okay, maybe it was slightly high, but I'm kind of fine with that because it wasn't overly, it's not a huge amount of money for United. And the fact he's so young and he's so versatile, your risks here, like, even if he doesn't pan out, you're probably going to lose like £15 million max, because he can run down his contract. He'll still be 26. He can play right back, left back, right wing, left wing. He can, like, there will be teams out there that will find value to the tune of like £10-15 million for this kid.
Yeah.
when he's 25. Like it really doesn't represent that big a risk, even if it is a very, very slight overpayment. But we're like really spitting hairs here. And yeah, like the biggest thing is that he's filling this hole that Amorim's been kind of system's been crying out for. And while he is very, very young, his experience is growing. He has had two seasons at Lecce. Last season, he kind of played about half of the league games. He played most of the league games, but he only started half of them and got about 17 90s. This season, he started 21 of their 23 Serie A games, and he's got like just under 21 90s. So he's basically, when he's been on the pitch, he's mostly played every minute. And he's only missed two games. I think one was through suspension. So for a 20-year-old kid, this guy is already got a good amount of experience under his belt. And we've seen his versatility this season so far at Lecce. I think I looked at his positions played so far in the games he's played in the league, and he's played at right wing, left wing, right back, left back, and left wing back already this season in the 21 games they've played. So when we say players can play in other positions, it's often like you can put them there, but you don't really put them there often. This guy does get used a lot. I do think he will be used pretty much exclusively at left wing back, but having that opportunity or having that option to rotate him in another role is, you know, it's a really, really good ace to have up your sleeve. Numbers wise, kind of exactly what you want with a left wing back. He's not a big passer, but he's a good ball carrier, and he is a goal threat while also being completely respectively solid defensively. Like, he's 2.3 take-ons per 90, or more than any of the defenders in Serie A or the Premier League this season, bar 14. He's also averaging nearly two shots per 90. Obviously, these will be slightly skewed because he is playing quite a lot of different positions, more attacking positions as well. But also, Lecce are having a terrible season, which I'll come on to in a second.
I mean, the one thing I would say about his numbers is that, like, I think his attacking numbers maybe look a little bit better because he has played right wing quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I think his defensive numbers look a little bit worse because he's played right wing quite a bit. So, like, to some degree here, you're going on, like, scouting and, like, just looking at his tools. And, like, I don't have any worry about that. It's just more one of those things where I'm like, the numbers tell you a certain amount. But, like, broadly, you're looking at a guy and you're like, he is going to occupy this zone for United, and he's got all the physical abilities and the technical abilities to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's also interesting is he draws a ton of fouls.
Yeah,
he does. 2.5 fouls per 90. I think it's the most of any defender in Serie A or in the Premier League this season. And given where he's going to be taking the ball to, where he's going to be driving with the ball into, he's going to be driving into the final third, potentially a bit higher, driving into the penalty box or in and around it, he's going to be able to win fouls in very dangerous positions and kind of give United a load of set-piece opportunities, which they'll undoubtedly waste. But to have a guy who's constantly getting fouled, it's a nice sign to know that even if he's not completing a load of dribbles, like, he is causing issues for defence. And yeah, he's expect goal involvements per 90 is top 15% versus wing-backs. Again, that's going to be skewed for the fact he's playing further up the pitch. But he is direct. He asks a lot of questions of defences. He draws fouls in dangerous areas. He gets shots as well. And given how many, like, goal involvements Ahmad has had already from right wing-back this season, I backed Orgu to get a good number of chances from left wing-back. And if you look at the way United might set up, having, like, Dorgu on the left, Ahmad on the right of wing-backs, attacking midfield stable of Garnacho and Bruno, and Højlund or Xerxes, whomever, up top, particularly in that kind of bank of four players before you get to Højlund, that is quite a lot for a defence to think about and think, okay, where's the pain point here? How do we manage this? Where do we give space? Where do we... like? It's more than United have had if they're playing, like, Diogo Dalo at left wing-back, for example. So it will ask more questions of a defence. And also, like, all of these numbers that he's had so far this season, which are respectable numbers for a 20-year-old kid, this is an absolutely awful Lecce team. They've scored the least in Serie A. They've conceded the most. They've got the second worst expected goal difference per 90, but it's like 0.001 better than Venezia's. So they're basically like, they're somehow 14th, but they're basically bottom underlying numbers of everything. And, you know, United are also shit. So, really is like a real like-for-like transfer. He's going to the same scenario, just Manchester, not Lecce. So I do see this as super promising. I think his ball carrying will be a good thing to have. If you look at United, the only real kind of ball carriers, direct ball carriers in that sense, are Ahmad and Garnacho. Adding another person like that will help. I think there is a lot for him to improve. His dribble success rate's only 30%. His pass completion rate is under 80%. Like, these are things that you would expect to come up as he matures and kind of figures out when and what to do in certain scenarios. This guy is 20 years old. He is super young. And defensively, so far he's been completely sound, like three tackles and interceptions per 90, which is for me exactly where you kind of want him to be in the sense of the role he will play at United. Diogo Dalo is at 3.5 tackles and interceptions per 90. Ahmad is 2.5 per 90. So he is more attacking and less defensive than Dalo, but less attacking and more defensive than Ahmad. And I think that's kind of the role he will play. He won't be as high as Ahmad. He won't be as expected to contribute as much as Ahmad, but he'll be expected to contribute more attacking than Diogo Dalo.
Sure.
So yeah, I think this is a really good transfer. It's exactly what United should be looking at, how to fill it, how to fill that position. They haven't paid too much. The contract is very, very manageable. The age is really, really good. Of course, this isn't like a slam dunk. This isn't like a sure, like a foregone conclusion. There is a considerable chance that this guy doesn't materialise in the same way or develop in the same way that you'd hope. But the risk that they've taken on here is quite minimal, in my opinion.
I agree.
Versus like 2 seasons ago or a season and a half ago, where they bought Højlund for 70 million, which is basically finished player price for a player who is still super developing and has shown to really struggle so far. So yeah, in terms of rating, I would say like probably like a B+, just because he's not gonna set the world alight. He's not gonna move the needle massively immediately, but it is a square peg in a square hole in a position that United don't have any square pegs for. He is a good age and a good price, but he could potentially just not develop in the same way you'd wish. It's not like it's not nailed on success, but I do think that like United have, if this turns out to be a failed transfer, I can make my peace with that because United have basically, in my opinion, ticked all the boxes they should have.
I agree. Like I think it's not an A just because like he's going to have to be taught the position. It's a lot of responsibility for a 20-year-old to come straight into the team and play this role, and because he's not playing this exact role right now. Like he has played very similar roles, but like it's not like he's been playing left wing back and putting up colossal numbers in that spot. You know, so there is a slight element of the unknown. On the other hand, like you're right, it's a really good price, it's a good age. Just having somebody who knows what to do in this position is good. Physical gifts are good. Like kind of hard for you to lose out on this kind of deal. And to me as well, like it's a little bit like United fans used to whine and whine and whine, and they were like, every time that United want a player, there's like another 20 mil like added to the price.
The United tax?
Yeah, and I was just kind of like, I don't really think that's true, or rather, I don't think it's more true with United than it is with like the Premier League generally.
Mm.
Because there is this problem with the Premier League generally. But United fans used to whine about this all the time. And with a deal like this, I'm just like, oh, so you can buy like a starting quality left back for 25 million, can you? Okay.
Yeah.
So you actually could have been doing this the whole time. All right. Okay. Like that's how I feel a little bit. But yeah, I think it's a great signing. Good move. I'll give it B+ as well. Let's do a quick one. John Duran to Saudi. So John Duran to Saudi looked like it was happening the whole window. I mean, he was linked to some other places as well. But basically, Villa needed a bunch of money. He's just turned 21. They got essentially superstar money for a guy who is very promising, but has still played very, very, very little football. Like people talk about like how many goals he scored, but he's literally got like a handful of shots at the top level. Like he really just hasn't played very much.
He has a handful of starts at the top level.
Oh yeah, but I mean like even when, but you expect a guy, sure, but you expect a guy who's coming on to at least like get shots and opportunities.
Sure.
And he still hasn't had like that many of them. Like, yeah, look, he's got 12 Premier League goals and 7 Premier League starts. This is good stuff. But if I were a real club, I would not want to pay £60 million for a guy like this. Fortunately, Saudi teams are not real clubs and it's not a real league. And I mean, I know people are a bit sad about it, but like supposedly he was on what, like 40K a week or something like that at Villa. And now he's going to be on like 400K a week in Saudi Arabia. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, like, look, people got to get their bag. Like, it's fine.
This is the thing. Like, I hate everything about this transfer in terms of price, in terms of like, basically everything it represents, I hate. But I'm aware that football is a business. The players have a short career in terms of their earning potential. Morality aside, right, I'm fine with people chasing a bag because it's as a business move, being like, I'm going to, you know, set myself up for life. But if they do that, they have to fucking admit what they're doing. Like, don't try and play this as like a career move for football. This is money. So like anybody who tries to be like, oh, you know, great league, it's up and coming, whatever, nonsense. Chase the money. Just admit it. It's fine.
Sure, but I think that's okay. You know, like it just doesn't matter, man. Like, who cares? I don't really care about this.
Yeah,
like,
I can't be fucked
for him, this is like a B. He's going to get loads of money. He probably could have got loads of money, maybe not as much money, but he could have probably got loads of money playing top quality football in Europe. Maybe that's possible. Maybe at 25, he just comes back to like Europe. But I think it's going to be quite hard to come back at the highest.
Buys it.
It's going to be hard to come back at the highest level, right? Like, nobody's going to bring him back at the highest level.
No.
So yeah, I don't love it.
Hate it.
Yeah, garbage.
D.
Okay, sure. That's fine. Shall we move on to Rashford then? We talked a bit about Rashford before. Rashford obviously going off to Villa. Villa have brought him in on loan. They're apparently going to pay 75% of his wages minimum. And they've got a buy clause of like 40 mil with a 3.5-year contract pre-agreed. So if they decide to exercise that at the end of the season, he'll join on a 3.5-year deal. They've been super busy this window.
Like, yeah,
they sold Duran, Philogene, Diego Carlos, Buendia, who went out on loan, actually. They didn't sell him. And then Rashford, Marlon, Asensio, and Garcia, yeah, and De Zassi, like, all those guys have arrived. So, I don't know. It's a lot of stuff here that they've been doing. And to be honest with you, it's a bit of a weird one, because they're not going to make the Champions League, I don't think. And so it feels like they're trying to win the Champions League. Like, that's what it seems the move is about. I don't know. What's your take on it?
So, with the Rashford, the Rashford one is the most kind of interesting for me, and I find it hard to grade, because I think there are multiple sides to this deal, and it depends which lens you look at it through, and in terms of how good or bad it is. So I think for United, I think this is pretty good, but I do think, and I know you'll disagree with it, but I do think that the option price could be slightly higher, just on the fact that I think
that's insane.
Clubs are quite stupid, and his name actually carries a bit of weight, and he's only 27. I do not think he's worth more than that, but I think there's a world where you could drum him up enough to get a club to put out like another, I don't know, 5 or 10 million. However,
I think that's crazy, Pete.
I do think that the United are completely fine with not getting that extra 5-10 million pounds, because Villa, for whatever reason, have agreed to eat an absolute huge portion of his massive wages. So they're going to be paying minimum 75% of his wages. Granted, this is only till the end of the season for now, but minimum 75% of his wages that could raise to up to 90%. So at the minute, the least they'll pay per week is £225,000 for Rashford.
That's so much fucking money.
Their next highest earners are on 150.
Well, that's actually not true, right? Because apparently they're covering all of Asensio's wages.
Oh, I do.
Which are also over 200k a week. Like, so I think that with Asensio, Rashford, and De Zassi alone, I think they're adding 500k a week. Plus, that's they've got insane. Marlon and Garcia. So I think we're looking at like more than 600k a week they've added this window, and they've probably taken off 40, 80, maybe another like 70, 150. Yeah. Like maybe 200. So they've probably added like 400k a week to their
And Rashford can raise to 270k maximum if he hits whatever previously agreed incentives or performance based, whatever. I imagine those would be quite high, but they could essentially be paying £270,000 a week for Rashford, which is over double what they pay for Ollie Watkins, which is mental. Like,
God, that is not a good situation to be in.
And then I didn't even think to look at the Asensio wages, which are crazy at 200k then. So for United, getting a player that they're clearly not going to use, getting all of that money off the books, I think United pay like 75k a week now, which is, like I said, for in the Dorgui thing, it's the same as they pay Tyrone Malacia. Like, that is realistically like one of the best case scenarios, because we said that the transfer was always going to be like a actual proper transfer was always going to be really difficult to navigate for Rashford, and there weren't a lot of suitors, and getting his wages off the books immediately was virtually impossible. They've done a really good job of it so far. £40 million, it's an option, obviously. Sure. Okay. I agree that it's probably... I think it's what he's worth, potentially, if he finds a bit of form again. Like I think there is still a lot of quality left in Rashford.
That's crazy talk.
I think he's obviously had a couple of bad seasons. He has not, obviously, you know, not been involved, barely been involved in Amarim's squad, but go back to the Solskjaer era and he had a phenomenal season. And the season before that, he was actually pretty good as well. So at 27, turning 28, I think there is still quality left in him. He's a formerly top player, in my opinion. And there is a little bit left in him. Okay, sure, I don't know how much is left in him because he isn't getting younger. And I've always gone on I've always subscribed to the idea that there is a certain number of minutes in a player's legs. So there are concerns there. But £40 million, I think, if it goes well, I think that's a completely palatable price for Villa to play. Because they're also only going to action it if it goes well. So they have the control there. It's not an obligation to buy. If it was obligation...
That's the only good bit about this deal.
Obligation would be mental because there's no guarantee that he will find any form or play well. So an obligation would be mental. But option, it is expensive for the wages they'll pay. Though I think they're going to be paying like £5 million+ just in the 21 weeks between now and the end of the contract. But the fact it's an option is fine. At least it gives them a chance to get out if it doesn't go well. And if it does go well, they're getting a formerly top-level player, ex-international, ex-England international, at like just into the post-peak era of his career for £40 million. If it doesn't work out, they just send him back and then get his huge wages off the books as well.
I do not think... I don't think he's anything like a top player.
I said formerly top player.
But it's like 5 years ago.
Sure.
He's had one good season in 5 years.
Yeah.
And also when we say he's 27, I do think that in real terms, this guy's like more like 30 with like the minutes in his legs. We talked about this before. The wages are insane. The wages are like superstar wages for a player who has been performing at a below Premier League average level for the last 18 months. And he's like, there's other stuff as well that I know a bit about. Like his behavior off field, there are some worries about it that I've heard. I also just don't really see what he does. Like, he's not a left winger. United fans always used to say, well, he has to play on the left wing. He has to play on the left wing. It's like, why? He's crap there. Like, I'm sorry, but he doesn't do anything there. Like, he can't dribble anymore and he doesn't defend. The only things that Rashford ever has really popped in are like shots and goal scoring.
Yeah.
So he does striker stuff. But these days, you can't really have a guy who just like is on the wing notionally, but like basically gives you nothing that you expect from a winger. I think that's kind of a problem. So to me then, what is he? A backup forward? A backup striker rather? Like, I just don't really get that.
Yeah.
I think Asensio is a better fit for that. Daniel Marlon, I think, is probably a better fit for that. And like, I honestly think this purchase clause should be about 10 million. No, I'm not exaggerating.
That's so low.
It isn't, because the wages are crazy and he's got... he's got a very bad injury record, very bad, and he's like with worrying stuff, you know, like his back. That is a worrying kind of injury because it's hard for it to just like suddenly get better.
Yeah.
I just think like you're signing a player with a lot of miles on him who's already kind of like a bit older than you'd like, who's got attitude problems, who's got high wages and has injuries in his past and hasn't been good for like 18 months. And even then, like, it's debatable how good he was in a way that can map onto your team. So all that stuff really worries me. I definitely think they shouldn't do it. Like, you know, like sign him up permanently. And look, if they don't sign him up permanently, you're right. It's relatively little risk. But given that they've gone and got Asensio, I kind of don't understand why they've done this. They could have just got Asensio, who like covers a position of need. And they've already got Marlon, who also covers this position. And they could have just not bothered with this move. And like, I think that would have been totally fine. But I do just think like Villa, I said this like on the Transfer Flow podcast and like loads of Villa fans got really annoyed because they're stupid. but like Villa fans were like, sounds like jealousy. When I said Villa get tricked by prestige all the time. Villa are like, if a big team is in for a club and Villa get them, then they're just like, oh, we beat Arsenal to Buendia. Oh, we beat Chelsea to like this player. It's like, nobody cares, man. Oh, we beat Spurs to De Zassi. Okay, but you're ignoring the fundamental point, which is like, De Zassi's not very good. Like, this is what they're always like. And I just think that they end up building quite an old squad full of guys who I don't think are that good.
This is the main point as why I think there is still available value in Rashford, in that clubs are willing to just buy players based on the notoriety of or the weight that their name carries, basically.
Yeah.
This feels like basically this bang in the head, because I could make a little bit more peace with it if I could see like an actual place where he plays, like a fit for him in the squad. But I just don't. Like, I don't see him off the left because of, you know, Jacob Ramsey playing there, playing well. He doesn't do any wingery stuff that Emery wants him to do. He's not going to play as a nine because Watkins is there. You're not going to play two up top. You could play him on the right, but he's even less effectual on the right as he is on the left. Historically, his goal output has dropped by a third when he moves over to the right versus the left. You've also got Asensio and Malin there who are better fits in that right wing role.
Yeah.
So you're already down to like substitute minutes where you just throw him on in one of those three positions when you don't need to care about defensive attributes. You just need a goal, when you need to turn a loss into a draw or draw into a win. And you've got 25 minutes left of a game and you're just throwing a Hail Mary being like, Rashford, just go on, run at tired defences, get shots and try and make something happen. This is a huge amount of money for a player that does that role. You can get this for a fraction of the price. And I just don't see what value he adds to Villa based on the needs that they have in their forward line. And not only is he adding very, very little value, he's costing a huge amount for just to be there. So they've basically, in my opinion, bought a very, very expensive guy who's going to get substitute minutes. Or you're going to have to... things like historically, Emery's not going to just let Rashford float. Even if you play him on the right, even if you let him like play him on the right, okay.
Maybe if you play him in a 4-4-2, you can give him more freedom. But to me, this is like a D plus, because there's a chance he's okay.
For Villa, I think this is a D. For United, I think this is like a B plus.
Oh no, for United, I think getting him off the books at all is great. And the fact the buy option is 40 is insane. Though obviously Villa might be like, make the buy option at $1 billion. We're not going to pay it. Like, yeah. The only thing is, I don't think Villa think that way. I think Villa could easily do it. let's move on to Kvicha then. Yeah. €70 million, second biggest fee of the window. Like, one of the better players to move, definitely. Okay. So he's a good passer. He's a pretty good passer. And he gets tons of shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's at like 3.8 shots a game. And he's a big physical specimen. Downsides, his dribbling has been really ropey the last kind of 18 months. Like, he's gone down from like 46% success on the dribble to 26%. Now, I think that'll probably be improved by moving to Ligue 1, where there's just generally like a lower standard of football. Like, Serie A is a better league. But I also think, like, it's not my dream. It doesn't worry me too much. In the same way that it doesn't really worry me that he's got like quite low shot quality, just because I think like...
he's going to get shots.
He'll get shots. He'll get shots, and it's like Ligue 1. Like, he's going to have so much service. He's going from Napoli, where like he kind of was the service, to like, I don't know, João Neves, Fabian Ruiz, Vitinha, like loads of guys around him who can all create.
Yeah, and
so
shit guys in front of him.
Yeah, so I think this is fine. I think this is fine. On the other hand, like, PSG have a younger, and I would say borderline elite player already in this position, in Bradley Barcola, who's been outstanding domestically, like probably their best player domestically, and has done it in the Champions League as well. Like, he was fantastic against City. And it feels like they need to have a plan here. Like, is it that Barcola's going to be up front? Is it that Kvicha's going to... because maybe you look at Kvicha as well, and you're like, this guy's like over 6 feet tall. He's big and strong. Like, he is going to play centre forward.
Yeah, it could.
Maybe that's the plan. He gets loads of shots. We don't really love that he shoots from 25 yards all the time. So the solution to this is just to park him up front.
Yeah.
Like, all that is totally fine. It just seems to me like it's a really good player. I just don't know why they're doing it.
You're right in that he's probably the highest quality player, at least the biggest household name to move in January. I struggle to think of somebody bigger. But it seems quite unnecessary.
Yes.
For a decent amount of money and for a system that has, at least over the past season and a half, been a lot more cultured or seemingly more cultured and calculated than what this move looks like. It kind of, you look at it and it's like, you've kind of got a very, very expensive and very talented player who has now created a bit of a bottleneck in areas that you didn't need to create a bottleneck in because you have incredible players there already. And it almost creates more selection issues than needed. Whereas you think if you don't... also, why in January as well? Like, everything about this is strange.
You say that, but like, the price is such that, like, generally speaking, the only reason that we say like don't do stuff in January is because like players are overpriced. But this is a pretty decent price. Like, would I like to pay a little bit less? Sure, but you're not going to get him for less. So I don't know why Napoli sold him, but like PSG buying him in January when they're like, we've had trouble in the Champions League, we've shipped out Kolo Muani, we're going to bring in Kvicha. Yeah. I kind of get it.
I guess if you look at the squad now, they've only really got Goncalo Ramos as a, like an out-and-out striker. on their books.
Yeah, they've played like Kang In Lee and Asensio and loads of guys there. It's been like, weird.
Adding Kvaratskhelia as an option at centre forward, giving you the option to potentially play him with Barkley in whatever combination. I see value in it. It just it's not like an out and out slam dunk for me. It's kind of like a C plus B minus maybe.
I think it's
probably a B, but I think it's probably a B, but a begrudging B.
I think it's a. Oh.
It comes back as a C plus, and you send it back to get remarked, and it gets bumped up to a B minus.
If they could convert him into a centre forward or something like that, then maybe it's great. But yeah, to me, it's kind of maybe a B minus, C plus. Yeah, I guess. Like, I just don't really know what to make of it. I don't know what their plans are. It's just kind of like, it's just kind of perplexing.
But also, what I don't like about the scenario that you just presented there was that basically whether this transfer is good or not is entirely hinges on how well he performs. And obviously that sounds kind of like stupid to say, but there are transfers that are good transfers that just don't work out. This is like the ends have to justify the means, basically, to make sense.
Sure. But I also think that, like, you know, he'll retain some of his value. He's pretty young.
He is
like,
very young.
He's fine. Let's move on to Spurs then. First one, Danzo, let's just get it out of the way. 26 years old, counts as homegrown, 25 mil. I think a pretty good player, but injury problems and, you know, maybe some issues defending in open space. Also, Dragosin goes out injured, like with an ACL. Yeah. So you're kind of like, okay, so Spurs wanted to add a defender, but in real terms, they've just like, they haven't added numbers. They've just changed guy. Mm. I think he's a good player. I think it's a really tough environment for centre-backs to come into. You know, you have to cover so much ground. But Spurs had to do something. Price is totally fine. Don't think it will hurt summer plans. I think it's preferable to a loan for Disasi, because apparently Villa have paid 5 mil to loan Disasi, which I just think is like bananas. So I kind of think like this is definitely better than that. To me, this is just like a B transfer. That's totally fine. The more interesting one is Tell, right?
Yes.
So Tell was obviously available like all window, and I think wanted / expected a bigger move, and nobody really came in for him. Like, Arsenal were linked, but clearly were like never that interested because it never went anywhere. I think he was interested in a United move, but I think United just didn't have the money probably.
Also obviously in a position that United don't really need. Like, there are more pressing matters for United than adding another potential centre forward / wide player.
Yeah, and like none of the other super clubs like were really like in the market. So it's like your options are stay at Bayern or kind of accept this move to Spurs. And it looked like he rejected it and then accepted it.
It was like a really begrudging arrival.
And in the end, like loads of things changed about it. So
yeah.
Bayern, so I think he wanted a straight loan. Loads of clubs wanted a straight loan, but Bayern wanted a loan with obligation or maybe with option. Spurs offered like 60 mil. And so in the end, he's going on loan to Spurs with an option to buy set at 60 mil. Mm. Spurs are also paying his wages and they're paying a 10 million euro loan fee. So I don't think Tell wants this to be a permanent move. Like immediately after this happened, the double pivot actually covered this week that there were like news stories coming out where it was like, well, obviously Mathis Tell can decide if he wants it to be permanent. You know, Spurs can't just trigger the option and get him. And it was like, well, yeah, that's always the case.
Yeah,
but the fact that they're leaking that story does seem like they're saying, yeah, like I don't want to do this permanently. Obviously, he might change his mind, or he might turn out to just like not be the player that everyone thinks he is. He might just be okay. But
he looks great.
Yeah, but he also hasn't played very much. He's played sub minute. So the bear case here is like he's played sub minutes in a bad league for a super club. Bayern seem happy to let him go, despite the lack of backup for Kane. And also, I think that it's quite unlikely Spurs can get him for what he's worth. So this 60 million euro fee, if in these 6 months or whatever, he ends up being a player who's worth that, I don't think he goes to Spurs.
This is a funny thing.
He'll go back to Bayern, right? Another club will come in for him.
Anywhere else.
And if he isn't quite good enough to attract those clubs, but Spurs pay the 60 mil, then they're probably overpaying. So I kind of don't really understand.
But he also
understand.
Can still reject that and just stay at Bayern.
Sure. I don't really understand though, like, what is the scenario in which he's good enough for Spurs?
There isn't.
And Spurs, what, he's good enough to merit 60 million being spent on him, but not so good that Liverpool or or Arsenal or fucking, I don't know, like Barcelona or
literally
someone.
Literally any
like
club that isn't him. Spurs.
Yeah, like, or Bayern just being like, okay, come back and we'll give you some minutes next year because Harry Kane's 32. Like, he's a good player. Like, his dribble success is good at the same time, and his shot volume's good and his shot quality is good. But again, sub-minutes, weak league. So I like him a lot, and I think he could potentially be great. He's incredibly young, and he's showing stuff. He's showing lots of stuff you want to see. But this feels like Spurs saying, we're going to spend 10 mil to try and win a cup this season.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it?
And, like, that's fair enough. But, like, you are... Look, if they lose to Liverpool tomorrow night, because we're recording this on Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah.
So they've got the second leg of their Carabao Cup thing tomorrow. If they lose that and go out, then suddenly you're like...
They have to win the Europa League, basically.
Are we just betting this on the Europa League? Are they still in the FA Cup?
They're still in the FA Cup, but it's the fourth round. Like, they could easily get...
Yeah, exactly.
So like a really tough draw in the fifth round.
It's loads and loads and loads of, like, run. It's loads and loads of games. So, like, coin flip, coin flip, coin flip, basically. So,
yeah, like,
I don't
know. We beat you on penalties in the third round. Like, the draw in the FA Cup can be anything. Yeah, I there's two sides of this coin. I like the move in the sense that it fills holes really well with a player that I think has the potential to be great, but is currently a very, very good player. He can play off left, he can play through the middle. From the face value of Matthijs de Ligt arriving at Spurs, I think, great, he will make them better and he will could help them win a trophy, which is the kind of, you know, monkey in the back that they've had for the last 17 or so years. Everything else about the deal is mental. It just doesn't make sense because they're essentially paying a load of money for a player that quite categorically has made it clear that he doesn't want to be there permanently. This is very much a manufactured necessity to get him minutes on the pitch.
Yeah.
And he's happy to spend 6 months in London and then he'll take stock as to where his next move is in the summer. But he's made it quite clear that it's not Spurs. So then, or it's very, very unlikely to be Spurs and certainly isn't Spurs at the minute. But that then means that Spurs are spending a lot of money, like £10 million plus wages, just for this 6 months of... Essentially, it's like a £20 million annual fee to have Matthijs de Ligt pay for you for a bit.
Yeah. They're paying superstar money for a guy who, like... Well, look, obviously, you know, it's possible that he looks great and Spurs are like, we're going to do it, and nobody else happens to come in because they just have other targets. It is possible. It feels unlikely, but it's possible.
Mm.
And he accepts the move because he just loves being at Spurs so much and also because he's playing all the time and he hasn't really played that much. Like, it's possible. I don't think it's very likely. So, to me, this is a very expensive move... essentially to probably develop a player for somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you are probably developing Tell so he can go to Bayern or Barca or another Premier League club, and at the end of the year you'll be like, right, so we spent 10 mil plus wages to give this guy 6 months of Premier League experience, and all that meant was Liverpool said,
yeah,
oh well, we're gonna sell Nunez and get him instead. Great.
Yeah.
I don't like that. So I don't know, player wise, the money is just a lot.
This is another thing that it's like...
It's hard to grade, but maybe a C+, you know?
I think worse than that, because I think basically the only reason it's anything higher...
Kind of depends if they win a cup, right? Depends if they win a cup. If they win a cup, then...
This is the thing. It's like, it's so hard to grade because I said it about whoever it was 10 minutes ago. I don't like that Spurs are putting themselves in the scenario where basically the ends need to be so good just to justify that they've done this, because otherwise it looks kind of mental. And... they're basically going all in on winning the Europa League. It seems a lot like a lot of eggs in one basket for a transfer that isn't overly necessary, given the fact that he's shown basically no interest in actually coming to Spurs long term, and it feels like a bit of a waste of money from a club that has historically been quite frugal and quite, you know, spent money very calculated and well. For me, it's like a C-D. Obviously, that changes if they win a cup. I just think it's like, I just hate this, the idea that there's a player going on loan to a club that he's very clearly said, well, basically he's not said it, but everything that's come out from his camp has basically implied that he doesn't want to be there long term. And then that means you're paying a ton of money to develop a player for a club. He could next season, he could literally be lining up on a different side of London than he is now. And Spurs will have played a huge part in actually getting him that move.
Because Chelsea will 100%
yes.
do it. Chelsea are totally the team who will be like, oh, he looks good, we'll have him. And like, no offense, but like, Chelsea have more draw. Like, exactly. They just do.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
okay. Yeah, I love it.
I think the fact that it's like, the fact they have to win a trophy to make this good doesn't sit well with me.
Okay. So City, I'm going to blast through these quickly. Yeah. So Vitor Reis, 30 mil, whatever. Don't really expect to see much of him. 18 years old. Don't care. Kusunov, also very young, immediately went into the lineup. They ended up paying about twice what it was reported. Like originally they were like, they're going to agree a fee between like 15 and 20 mil. And they ended up paying 33.5 mil, which is like a lot of money. And he's really quick, should help. They do just need to get more athletic. They do need to get younger. At the same time, you get a player in who's got barely any minutes and in a much weaker league, and he's going to look rash. And in that, he had a horrible game against Chelsea. Got booked,
was not good.
Gave away the goal, looked like shit, looked scared. And like, look, I don't blame him. Like, that is going to happen. But like, is that going to save the season? No. So to me, the interesting ones here are Marmoush and Gonzalez. Mm. I think Kusunov and Reis are just like B, C, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. Like B minus, C plus.
I think the B is their bodies. They're bodies that they needed, I guess.
Yeah, look, with Reis, like they've gone from, oh, we're short on centre-backs, we're going to put in the best 18-year-old in our academy, to saying, okay, we can put on the best 18-year-old in Brazil. Like, that is obviously like an improvement. But I don't really... I just don't care. Like these guys, I don't think are going to radically change the defense. So Marmoush, great player, loads of shots, very quick, should be decent at pressing, good passer. 26 years old, I think probably a slight overpay.
Yeah, I agree.
But not a crazy one for January. You know, maybe 15 mil or something, and City don't really care. He doesn't make them that much younger, but you know, a little bit. I think it's fine. They just need athleticism in there. Mm-hmm. I'd probably give that one... I think that one's a B. I think that's a good move.
Yeah.
Gonzalez is a more difficult one because they needed a central midfielder and they ended up getting him. And StatsBomb's radar is a bit more positive on his defending than like you just think from his defensive numbers. Sometimes that happens in the Portuguese league because the top teams have so much of the ball that their defensive numbers are quite low. But when you adjust them for possession, they're actually pretty good. When you adjust his for possession, they're still just kind of like, okay. But obviously StatsBomb have like on-ball value for passing and dribbling and carrying and defending and all that kind of stuff. And he does pretty well on all that stuff. He is a guy, he's 23. He's a Barcelona Academy graduate. He's paid for a big team and a team who probably are not going to be that dissimilar in how they face other sides. At the same time, he's going to face much, much better attackers.
Yes.
And you're basically getting the role of stop everyone running through our midfield, which...
Yeah.
City still are really struggling with. So I think, and again, I think they're overpaying a bit because they had to do a buyout. I think that one is probably a B minus. He might end up being great. He honestly might end up being great, but I think it's a B minus just because
it's a lot of money.
The price is a little high.
Yeah.
Rodri is going to come back next season and be the dedicated starter again. And I would not want, if my team were super porous, I would not want to be bringing in a guy from Porto, who I think can defend a bit, but is not like amazing at defending, and saying, by the way, you now please stop everything going through our midfield.
Yeah.
Like those are my concerns. I think it just all comes down to Pep. I think Pep needs to fix, like, to me, there are just tactical issues that are way more worrying for City than just like swapping out one player for another player.
I think on the whole, City's business so far in January, they spent a lot of money, but they filled a lot of holes that they needed to fill. Like, we knew they were going to have to do a load of business in the window. Potentially this is kind of preempting the fear of a impending transfer ban in the next window or two. Who knows? Remains to be seen. But they needed to go out, get players to fill holes. They've done that. It's not perfect, but I think it's probably like a C-plus window overall. C-plus, probably a B-minus window overall for City, in that they've kind of done slightly more than the bare minimum they needed to do to make their squad kind of more functional. And now it's down to like, how do we go from the city we are now to the city we expect ourselves to be.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. So we got one more.
One more.
And I think this one is the most perplexing one, like, honestly. And this is Xavi Simons. So he's made a permanent move to Leipzig, 55 mil, rising to 80 mil, but only on a 2.5-year deal until summer 2027. And PSG have a sell-on clause. So nobody could quite work out why it's only a 2.5-year deal.
Yeah.
Because that makes the cost obviously like 30 million a year, like with wages, which is insane. So the immediate question a load of people asked was, well, do we know where he's going next? Like, have they basically pre-agreed a move to Liverpool or Arsenal or something? And PSG get their sell on and Leipzig get their money
it's
back in a little bit more.
It's essentially a complicated loan.
But it just feels like, what if that falls through? What if he gets injured?
Yeah.
Like, what if he doesn't want to go? Like, what if they pull out because a better player becomes available? You know, like, it just feels like the options are, one, Leipzig are stupid. Two, there's some clever financial thing going on. And there'll be like an automatic, you know, he'll play 10 games, then they'll be like, he's automatically extended for 3 more years or something, you know?
Sure.
And maybe there's some like financial incentive to do that. Or three, they've already agreed this sale. If it is the last one, it's insanely risky.
Yeah.
And I just don't really, I don't understand it. And even then, if they're paying 55 mil up front and PSG had a sell on, they'd have to sell for like 80 mil to get any sort of reasonable profit on it. And that would still be, okay, you're going and selling, you're doing all this to make 17 million euros.
Yeah.
But the risk you run is ending up with a player that you can't afford. Like, I just don't, it's very strange to me.
The first thing you said there as an option is that RB Leipzig are stupid. But I think historically that's been the opposite, right?
It's like, well, exactly. That's why
their
like,
recruitment's been super
smart.
How does
that work?
And yeah. It's like, so for me, it cannot be that. It has to be something else. Which one of those two potential options, I don't know. But like on the face of it, just looking at like the deal sheet, none of this makes sense because it's way too much money, way too short a contract. And yeah, the risk that they run is so far outweighs like a nominal gain in profit that they might make in 2.5 years. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, as a player, love him. Great.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. He's like, he's still only 21. Like, it's one of those guys where like, you don't look at his age for a little while. And then you think, when I go back, he must now be 23. But he's still 21. Mm. And he's got, his numbers are down a bit this season because Leipzig have been terrible this season. But for expected goals and assists, for expected assists especially, for progressive passing, for defending, for dribbles. Like last year, he was at nearly 3 dribbles per 90 and a really high completion rate. This season, he's down to like 1.5, but that's still like totally fine. I mean, there's a really, really good player here. And I do think that he should probably go somewhere else. And I think it's weird to go to Leipzig now, given the season they're having, where they've been quite bad. I don't know. Like,
tinfoil hat on. Jurgen Klopp. Head of global soccer at Red Bull Association. Xavi Simmons moves in a weird deal in 2.5 seasons or in 2 seasons from now. If Xavi Simmons moves to Liverpool for like a very palatable price.
Yeah.
I would not be shocked.
No. The obvious candidates here are like Liverpool, Arsenal.
Mm.
I think Chelsea will go for Garnacho. Yeah, there aren't that many clubs who could do this. I mean, like Barcelona. Barcelona want a left winger. He's obviously a Barcelona Academy guy. Like, he's more of a midfieldery type winger than a winger type winger. Mm. But that might work. That might work for Barcelona. So if they've agreed that kind of move, like, that's totally fine with me. But I just think...
The timing is of Klopp. Klopp's been in that role for, like, 2 months. 3 months now.
What, so you think he's just agreed it with Liverpool?
No, I just think the timing is very telling because it's such a strange deal. And then you look at the fact that I'm looking at the press release from RB Leipzig announcing that Klopp had taken on the role of global head of soccer or whatever. 9th of October, 2024. So we are 3 months. That's 3 months ago.
Like full-on conspiracy theory.
I mean, I did open this section saying tinfoil hat on. But maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just coincidence. But it does feel like a very, very... The timeline is quite telling, in my opinion. So I really would not be surprised that Xavi Simmons ends up at Liverpool in a couple of years, a year or two. And this is basically like a really weird convoluted loan manufactured for, I assume, whatever financial gain or extra maneuverability, but is spearheaded by Jurgen Klopp.
Okay. I mean, sure.
We'll revisit that in season 5 of the podcast.
Yeah, I think this is something we have to come back to later. Like once we hit the kind of like Joe Rogan turning point where we just like, start talking about who built the pyramids and shit. Like we can bring that one back and see what happens. If he goes to Liverpool in the summer, that will be very funny though. But they are an obvious candidate. I mean, though they've got quite a lot of left wingers, but interesting player. I mean, you know who you make a lot of sense for? Manchester United.
Would absolutely love it. Why would he go there though?
If you sold Garnacho, I don't know, man. Like people still, like United's still a big club. And also you do look at United and you're like, it is an opportunity to play all the time and be a superstar. Like, what if I'm the best player at Manchester? Because if he went to Manchester United, at this stage of Bruno's career...
Yeah, at the age of Bruno, yeah, he'd be our best player.
you'd probably be your best pair. Yeah, like at least in the next couple of years, you'd expect to become the best pair. And then you're like, the best pair at Manchester United is not such a terrible thing to be.
Yeah.
They pay a lot of money. Let's move on to the burn book. All right, burn book time. What I'm taking out of the burn book this week, no surprise to anyone, my wife's book. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 5th of February. It is out tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's an excellent book. It's very important to get like lots of sales. Mm-hmm. I want people to go out and buy it. It's called This Immaculate Body by Emma Van Straten in the UK and Commonwealth. In North America, it's called Creep, A Love Story by Emma Van Straten. It's a really good book. It's not too long. It's like a couple of hundred pages long, and it's like propulsive and funny and like really drags you along with it, and is really well written, and maybe it'll get made into something. Don't know yet. But but look, I just think she has put so much work into this, and it has produced something genuinely remarkable, and it is crazy to see like her book on the shelf of bookshops. And yeah. So I just think that like it's kind of the most remarkable thing that, well, I was going to say it's the most remarkable thing she's done, but obviously she's had kids. But like, you know, leaving the kids aside,
sure.
It's like a childhood dream she had that she's actually made happen.
Which made it happen.
But like, we went on a sabbatical and she would write while I would go to the gym. And then during like lockdown, she would write on like the bus on the way to work. And then during lockdown, she really would like, she'd get up early and go and work on it in the morning. And in the end, like, it's actually turned into a real book that is available across the world, which is insane to me. So I it would be wonderful if listeners would support it by going and buying it, because also you get a book, like give the book to someone, read it and then give it to someone and be like, oh, I thought of you with this book. It's about like obsession and you know, like mental disorder and being like being fucking weird.
Especially stalking.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, go and buy my wife's book. What are you taking out of the
book? I bought twice. I bought both of them.
I've bought it. And do you know how many copies of that book are in my house? So many. We've literally got like 20 copies of it, like in the American and UK editions. And I still went and bought it.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
My copy arrives tomorrow. Although the American one doesn't arrive till the end of February. Shoddy.
Yeah.
We'll leave a review.
You will be like in full on baby mode and have absolutely no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Right. Yes, I'm very, very excited to read it. I've learned to read just specifically for this book.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Really broadening my horizons. Because, you know, I only read nonfiction, 10 pages a day with 75 hard.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so that's coming out of the burn book, right? What am I taking out of the burn book? You're going to hate this, but I'll do it quickly. I know you're going to hate this. Well, you're not going to hate it. You're just going to have zero interest in it.
Okay.
I've mentioned this in the podcast very briefly before. I think it was in our ins and outs of the year or whatever. What I'm taking out of the burn book this week is The Golf League. TGL.
The Golf League.
So this is this new indoor technology-based golf competition that's started by Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. Started this year. It's like in like a basically like a venue arena, and it's basically a big golf simulator, like a really fancy golf simulator that all of like the biggest pros or a lot of the biggest pros are in, like teams. And basically it's just a new version of golf that is geared towards like faster paced, younger audience. And it started this year. I've only watched one of the matches because it was it's American time. It's based in America. Kind of annoying to actually watch live because we're in Britain. But it was the Tiger Woods' team playing Rory McIlroy's team, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll watch it. If I'm going to watch one of these matches, this is going to be the one. And it was fine. Like, there are loads of things they could improve. This is very, very new. They're probably still working it out as they go along. It can definitely be a better product than it is now. But what the product represents is like a more progressive development of where golf basically, like a famously stagnant, not necessarily stagnant sport, but a famously outdated sport and a stuffy sport. It does feel like it's actually trying to engage a new audience in a new way to bring itself into the 21st century. And it is quite fun. It's basically like what is quite cool, even if you don't follow golf, like to put into perspective what this is, like some of the players that are playing, there's like teams of four, I think it might be six teams of four, so that's what, 24 players. But like looking at the names of it, obviously Rory and Tiger, two big names in golf. Then you have like Xander Schauffele, who won two majors last year. Ricky Fowler, colloquially known as Big Dick Rick, loved by the younger fans. Then you've got like...
Because of his big dick.
Well, I mean, I think it's the energy, but it's just assumed.
Do any golfers have big dick energy?
Big Dick Rick. And also, right, John Daly, look up John Daly. He's an older golfer now, but like this is a guy who basically just like smokes a load of darts like around the golf course. Doesn't really do practice swings. Just fucking. He also has had a mullet basically since the 70s and not lost it. It's now come back in fashion. He's had it that long.
Jesus.
No practice swings. Like none of the fucking. None
well, he just
like,
walks up and just fucking hits it.
Basically, and he's a professional golfer.
That actually is quite fun.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Imagine if he just walked up, did nothing but just hit it instantly. That is kind of cool.
It's basically not that far off. Like all of the other professional golfers are taking like 3-4 minutes figuring out the exact yardage and talking with their caddy. He's just like, looks like a 9-iron, hits a 9-iron, and then it's like goes to like within 10 feet.
Great.
Big dig energy.
Good for him.
But the other players playing it, like Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama, like Adam Scott, like literally I've got a list of like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9 players here, all of whom have won at least one or more majors.
Wow.
As well as like Schauffele, McIlroy, Tiger. These are genuinely like some of the biggest names in golf right now playing in this tournament. And the thing I would kind of equate it to give it maybe a little bit more like understanding and perspective, this is basically like all of the top players in football forming like a midweek five-a-side league and televising it.
Okay.
This is basically that, which would be mental to see. Obviously, football is a very different sport. It's not really translated.
That actually would be sick.
But this is kind of what this is. And it's crazy that it actually exists. And like I say, there's loads of things that could develop and loads of things I can make better about it. But the fact that it just exists now and they've got buy-in from the biggest players in the game. Like, this doesn't work if it's just, like, bumfuck C-grade golfers. Nobody gives a fuck about mm-hmm. this. But the fact that they've got the biggest names involved in this and it's a completely new, dynamic, different type of golf that's geared towards a younger audience and it's kind of moving into this more casual and tech-inspired golf world. Like, for a sport that has been treading water for a while and is famously criticized for being outdated, I think this is a very long overdue and welcome for move forward with the times.
Okay. I don't give a fuck about golf, you're correct. What am I putting in the burn book this week? So as we were talking about the other day, like trying to get back into the gym at the moment, and I went the other day for the first time in a while, and I like parked myself in one of the like squat racks.
Mm-hmm.
Like got the weight down, like got the bar down, like put just a little bit of weight on it. It was like a 20 kilo bar and I put like 25 kilos on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like did some like, basically I hadn't deadlifted for a while. So I just did like a couple of reps to make sure that like my form was right, make sure I was feeling it in the right places, blah, blah, blah. And I put a bar down. I obviously was not trying super hard, you know, so it wasn't like, oh my God, this is the real workout.
Yeah.
And this guy like on the squat rack next to me, this like middle-aged bald guy, he comes over to me and he's pulling this like kind of smug smile and he goes, mate, and he points at my like running shoes because I was wearing like Hoka running shoes. And he goes, you're wearing shoes like that, you're going to lose so much power, mate, when you're doing this, so much power. And I said, like, I kind of had my headphones in as well. And it's like one of those things where you're trying to stop your music,
yeah,
but it's not stopping. And so I was just like, this is annoying me. But I pulled them out and I was just like, and I said, I know I don't need input. And he
I
kind
can
of like
see this in my head as well.
I just kind of was like, yeah, I don't need input. And he like walked away kind of still with this little smug smile, like, well, if he's not going to benefit. By the way, this guy as well was in just like normal shape. Like, okay, you don't have to be in perfect shape to give someone advice at the gym. But I do think if you are this kind of like smug asshole who's going to go and give someone advice, you should probably be in crazy shape.
Yeah.
And I looked at this guy and I was like, you're like a normal man. Like you go to the gym, but you're not like...
There's a ceiling you need to have broken through to have the audacity to think that you can be like handing out critique or advice.
Yeah.
And if I'd for this guy to be merited and taken.
If this guy had been in insane shape or was clearly a power lifter, you know, had huge like legs or whatever, then sure. But like, he's just a normal man.
But also,
and I was just like,
you're lifting 70 kg as well. It's not like you're maxing.
No. I was lifting 45. I had 25 on plus a 20 bar.
Oh, sorry. So I did 25 each side.
So, no. So I just said like 25 on, because I was just like, 45 is like, I need the weight on it to feel it. Also, yeah. If I didn't put any weight on the bar, I was like, I'm lifting it off the ground. So I'd just be bending down a long way, yeah. Right? You know, so I put just some weight on it. And then I like went up to like my first working set, which I think was 70 kg.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, the problem is now I'm going to take my shoes off.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was always going to take my shoes off because I always do.
Yeah.
To deadlift.
Hell.
But I was like, now this fucking guy is going to see me take my shoes off and he's going to think,
job done.
You know, I've improved another one. And I was just like, is it not universally understood at this point that no one wants to be fucking talked to in the gym? you know, or do people just think, oh, well, hot girls, I'm not allowed to talk to them in the gym, so I'll go and talk to other men and be obnoxious to them? Fucking go away. Like, I was just like, if I'm deadlifting in such a way that it looks like I'm going to hurt myself, okay, that's a different case. If someone looked like they were going to hurt themselves in the gym, I would go up to them and I'd say, but the way I'd do it is I'd say, mate, I'm not trying to like give you the impression that I think I'm hot shit, but you look like you're going to hurt yourself when you do that. Like, or please don't do it like that. You're just going to hurt yourself. And then if they choose to ignore you and hurt themselves, like, fine. But I would make clear I'm not being an arsehole. But generally speaking, treat everyone at the gym like they're a girl who's too hot for you. They don't want to fucking talk to you. Yeah. I was like, I'm too hot for you. Go away. It was so fucking annoying. I was just like, I've literally just got here. Like, you know what I don't do? Walk into the gym, walk over to the squat rack, literally put my bottle of water down, put a couple of weights on it, and then immediately just like do my working set. I haven't done any warm up, haven't done anything at all. Like, I mean, I guess he doesn't know that I've just like walked into the gym. But from my point of view, I'm like, I had Versa grips there, you know, on the floor, but I wasn't wearing them for this set.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, do you think I brought the Versa grips to the gym, like, for decorative reasons?
Yeah. Like, or to lift 45 kilograms.
Exactly. I haven't put them on yet because this is not a serious amount of weight. Like, it is a serious amount of weight, but it's like not, you know, it's not like what I'm planning to lift. So I was just kind of like, I can't believe there are people still like this in 2025. And a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Like, truly, I think so many people are just like, I've been doing this for a few years and I've watched a few YouTube videos about weightlifting and now I think that I know so much about it. Just shut the fuck up. No one wants to hear it. Like, just leave everyone alone. And it just really pissed me off. And of course, it pissed me off the most that I then took my shoes off. And I was like, well, look, if I really were like a total newbie weightlifter, like, I probably wouldn't take my shoes off. I might say fuck off, but like, you rarely see somebody who's really new to the gym take their shoes off to deadlift. But also, you know what you rarely see a newbie to the gym do? Deadlift by themselves in the gym. You know? I was like, what are the odds that I'm deadlifting with correct form, but I don't know that I should take my shoes off? Like, what are the odds that I, in learning to do a deadlift correctly, because I know I was doing it correctly, because I was doing it with 45 kilograms, what are the odds that I've learned how to do a deadlift correctly, but nobody has ever said to me, yeah, wear like bare feet or lifters for doing this exercise?
People who are very, very new to the gym will most likely avoid like barbell squat racks for a while.
Yeah, like, which is what's good about them.
They'll stick on pin-loaded machines because they're just figuring out what their place in this new world. And it's a much more controlled and manageable kind of scenario.
And it's safer and it tells you how to perform the activity. Yeah. Like, you sit on the seat and you're like, oh, okay, my arms go here, my legs go here, like, sure. Whereas obviously, yeah, the barbell. For years, I only used barbells probably for stuff like, you know, curls and things, because I was kind of like, I like machines and I do like machines, but also there's more danger to the barbell. The barbell is more difficult, like, which is why I do it now, because I don't want to do tons and tons of like exercises for smaller muscle groups when I can do like big compound exercises. And I just think, like, if you show me people who can lift a lot on a barbell, like, those people are fucking strong. You meet people who go to the gym all the time and use the machines who are not strong, but you never meet somebody who goes to the gym and uses the barbells and isn't strong.
If you put a load of weight in the barbell and use it incorrectly, you will get hurt.
Yeah, you'll get fucked
up. You can put a load of weight on like a pin loaded machine and do it with kind of bad form. It's not going to really fuck you up. I mean, you might kind of be a little bit sore or like kind of have a jarred hip, like bone or whatever, like jarred joint or whatever. But realistically, the risk of damage there is significantly lower.
Yeah, yeah. So I was just like, don't force me to do this. It's only happened to me, honestly, a couple of times in my life.
It's so funny that it happened the first time that you've gone back in ages as well.
I know. And I was just like, again, I've literally got like Versa grips here. Do you think this is my first time? But yeah, it was like classic little like homunculus who, you know, got a divorce, went and got a testosterone supplement, started listening to Andrew Huberman and Joe Rogan.
Lost all his hair.
Yeah.
Bottom master MX5 because it's the only sports looking like car he could afford.
Yeah, he could afford, yeah, exactly. And now he's like, I'm going to live forever. Like, me and Andrew Huberman, like we shall rule the world. Fucking shut the fuck up. Like, honestly, shut the fuck up. Go and watch the golf league, you virgin. Sorry, what are you taking out? What are you putting in the burn book, rather?
Talking about pathetic little virgins, what I'm taking out of the burn book what I'm putting in the burn book, sorry, is disabling WhatsApp read receipts. Because this is absolutely
coward's
pathetic,
me.
Cowardly behavior.
Agreed.
Like this is peak soy boy beta cuck move. Horrible behavior.
Soy boy beta cuck.
Because, obviously the reason for people doing it is so they can create this kind of like Schrodinger's message scenario where the message can be viewed as both read and unread at the same time, and they don't have to kind of nail their colours to the mast as to whether they've actually read your message and just chosen not to reply, or whether they've not seen it. And I just think this is entirely unacceptable behaviour in socially developed society. And like my issue with it is that not only do they want to have, these people want to have their cake and eat it, as in like they want to read the message but not like flip the social egg timer of the acceptable time left to reply, but they're also doing it because I think they think people really care about whether they have left them unread or not, which I think is super self-involved. Now, obviously, I'm doing a full segment on this, which might lead you to believe that I actually do care about whether people have read my message or not.
I think you do.
I can assure you that I absolutely do not. What I do care about, though, is the fact that they think I do by turning their read receipts off. And also, my biggest issue is that they don't have the moral fortitude to stab somebody in the front. Like, if you're going to leave somebody on red, fucking leave them on red, double blue tick them and don't reply. And reply whenever you feel it's appropriate. Because that also lets people know where they stand better in the relationship. Don't hide behind your little two grey ticks. Like, get fucked. And also, right, if you believe, more often than not, vastly more often than not, the people that hide behind these little grey ticks have a self-inflated view of like how important they are in the world and how important they are in their like friendship groups, or how much people really care as to whether like they're replying or reading their messages. They're like, oh, I don't want to offend people, or I don't want to upset people because, you know, I'm just so busy that like I read the message but I just didn't have time to get back to it for like 2 weeks. But if I turn them off, then they never know that I'm just ignoring them, kind of. Mm-hmm. People don't give a fuck about you. People don't give that much a fuck about you. Like, get over yourself. This really kind of does sound like I do care if I know people have read my messages or not, but I just think that it is very cowardly to hide behind the anonymity of the grey ticks. Be an adult, put your blue ticks on. If you leave someone on red, be fine with leaving them on red and whatever consequences that might come from that. But don't try and make it like you just don't read messages for a few weeks. Be an adult, stab people in the front, not the back, accept the consequences of your actions, stop being pathetic little cowards. Nobody cares that much.
Yes.
Turn your ticks on. Turn your ticks on. And if you want to leave somebody in red, just do it fucking properly.
Fuck yeah. I agree with this. I agree with this. Like, ideas above your station.
Yeah.
Like, the world isn't like waiting on tenterhooks to see if you've read the message. Though sometimes with work, I'm like, it would be helpful to know if you've read my fucking message. Like, but not because I love you so much, because you're being slow.
Yeah.
Like, get a fucking move on. And then you have to message someone saying, like, have you seen this or not? Can you fucking reply to me? They're like, oh, sorry, yeah, just been a bit busy. And you're like, you're fucking useless, cunt.
You read it as soon as it came in, and I know for a fact.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good one. I hate these people too. That brings us to the end of our public episode for this week. We will catch a bunch of you over on the paid side, but the ones we don't, thank you very much for listening. Please buy my wife's book. Consider subscribing, because we do, I think, like, make quite a good effort on the paid side, and we've got a nice bunch of subscribers now. It also means you can ask questions and generally participate a little bit more in the kind of content of the show. So thank you very much, and we'll catch a bunch of you later. Bye.